Showcase Sundays today on the Mutual Audio Network.
The following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance.
Welcome back to Mutual Presents. My navigator, Penny the Cat, and I are making our periodic scouting around the solar system with 2000 plus radio drama's first anthology science fiction series from the Mutual Broadcasting System. Our double feature this week to keep us company as we course past Saturn includes Alone and Worlds Apart. So let's wind back those clocks now that we're still in sublight speed.
Adventures in the world of tomorrow. Dramatic stories of the years beyond 2000 AD. Today, a story of the world of 2000 plus 60. A story called Alone.
I listened to my footsteps as I walked down the long corridor. Just my footsteps, for the first time in so many months. No nurses, no doctors, no burly attendants at my side. I was walking alone. I was well. I knew who I was and where I was and what I was going to do. I walked past the photoelectric cell that operates the huge bronze doors, out into the brilliant sunshine, and down the road leading toward my laboratory in the heart of Nuclear City. I passed up the hospital limousine service. I wanted to walk, to breathe in the air of freedom, to drink in the sunshine, the peace of the quiet countryside. I walked slowly because I realized that all too soon I would be engulfed by the noise and the tumult of the Earth's top research center. And finally, I reached the city proper. I started up the broad avenue lined with laboratories. And then suddenly, something was wrong. Terribly wrong. I stopped a moment and listened. And then I realized what was wrong. Not a sound. On this avenue, normally bursting with activity, with the whine and groan of machinery and the roar and rumble of nuclear bombardment, there was nothing. Not a sound. Not a voice, not a soul, not a single solitary human being. For a moment, a wave of panic swept over me. How would you feel in my place? They had taught me well at the hospital. I fought it off in my mind, but my feet hadn't been psychoanalyzed. They began to go faster and faster through the streets and down the alleys, looking, searching for some sign of life. A cat. I stumbled up the two steps and flung open the door. Hey. Hey, anybody here? There was nobody in the shop. It was empty. Only the sound of that cat yowling in the back room. I stepped over to the door separating us. All right. All right, kitty, take it easy. I'll let you out. Just let me slide this bolt. Ah, here we are. Now, let's see what you look like. Hey, kitty. Kitty, where are you? Where are you? It was gone. Vanished. One moment, It was scratching furiously and yowling its full head off. The next, it had disappeared. All that was left after that strange hissing noise was a small dark stain on the floor. When something suddenly happens to your nervous system, when you find yourself with trembling fingers and a racing pulse, it's a good idea to do something physical, some familiar mechanical act. There was a pack of cigarettes on the counter of that deserted shop, right behind the cash register. I pounced on it eagerly, put a cigarette between my lips, took a quick puff to light it, and then drew in a deep breathful of the comforting smoke. And then I heard it. The sound of a motor, a big motor. I dashed to the door. And it seemed to me that the bus must be terribly close, but it wasn't. It was fully two blocks away. Only the unearthly quiet of Nuclear City made it seem so near. I sprang to the middle of the street, waving my arms wildly, shouting with relief, "Hey, driver! Driver, this way!" A bus, a 300-seater that would be bringing people, voices, news about this terrible silence that had fallen over Nuclear City. It was 150 yards from me now, and my skin began to crawl. There was something wrong. Now it was 100 yards from me, 50, and still the juggernaut hadn't slowed down or honked or swerved or given any indication that I was blocking its path. At the last split second, I jumped. And then turned to watch it thunder past me, catapult over the pedestrian ramp, and smash into the concrete walls of the deep space observation chamber. The bus was a tangled mass of twisted steel and lucite. That was all that was left of it. And the people? I forced my way in, through a gaping hole in the side, and thrashed through the wreckage, looking for some survivor, straining to hear a cry, a faint moan. There was nothing. From the rear straight through to the driver's seat, there was not a sign of any human being, dead or alive. It was a phantom bus. And the passengers and driver who had sat in it when it started its journey had vanished into thin air. I staggered away from the incredible spectacle, my senses reeling. It would take more than a cigarette, more than a familiar mechanical act to quiet the rising terror that was beginning to grip me. I had to find someone quickly, or my mind would give way again as it had once before.
You down there in the street?
I shook my head to clear it. Voices. Hallucinations. This was one of the first signs of insanity. I remember...
Please, you, down there in the street. Look up here. I'm up here at the window.
Slowly, I raised my head and looked up. She was there. Framed in the window. A frightened woman with red hair and a desperate urgency in her voice.
You're real, aren't you? Thank God. I thought I was going mad.
What's happened? What's happened to Nuclear City?
You are real. You talked. Come in. Quickly. Quickly.
I bounded for the front door. Tried the knob.
Open it. I'm coming down. Don't go away. Please, don't go away.
I heard her fumbling with a bolt. And at last I had found someone to talk to. In another moment, I would stand face to face with the first human being I'd seen in 3 hours. The door swung open. I caught a fleeting glimpse of red hair, and then... that soft, sibilant sound. And after that, nothing. No voice, no red hair, no woman, nothing. All at once, it dawned on me. I knew now with a dreadful certainty exactly what had happened. My mind had snapped again. No, not snapped, swerved. Swerved into that strange, rare condition doctors call Duval's phenomena. There were people on the street, there were voices and sounds in the air, but my sick mind shut them out, refused to acknowledge their existence. A mind that blotted out all living things might lead to anything. I was dangerous. I had to get away while I still had some control of my movements. I began to run. Run. Back to the one place where I knew I could do no harm. Back to the safe, calm, composed climate of the psychiatric hospital. Once more, the big bronze doors that I thought I would never see again clanged shut behind me. And I walked slowly down the corridor with a feeling of relief as though a heavy weight had been lifted from me. The elevator operator was not at his post, but I knew how to operate the pressure lift. I pressed the button that would take me to my own pavilion on the 36th floor. The therapy room where, just a few short hours ago, I had been playing a four-handed game of galaxies with my fellow patients. I took three eager steps into the room. And then I stopped. For the room was empty. With a strange emptiness, as though time had stood still. There was the table with the cards still laid out, the cigarettes still smoldering into ash. As I snuffed them out, I noticed the chess game in the corner, the same game I had watched Phillips and Maxim start 3 hours ago. Queen's gambit declined. Phillips was still a pawn ahead. But Phillips wasn't there. And neither was Maxim. Where were Marquand? And Lester, and Rosen, and Tian Chung, and Ferrer? I stepped out into the hall, plugged in the PA relay, and frantically tried to get someone.
Dr. Frankel. Calling Dr. Frankel. Please acknowledge. Nurse!
Hello!
Does anyone hear me? Emergency! This is emergency! In the name of heavens, if anyone hears me, please acknowledge!
In all that vast space, which was the regional psychiatric hospital, in all the miles of corridors and acres of wards and pavilions, there was no one. No one to hear my voice and acknowledge it. I fled down to the main floor along the silent corridor and out into the open. I jumped into the nearest vehicle, a turbojet that must have dated back to the year 2100 and made for Nuclear City. Something kept nagging at my mind, tugging at the strings of my consciousness, but I shook it off. I was afraid to think. I could only keep moving, hoping for... I had no idea what... In the city, nothing had changed. I wandered through the streets slowly, searching for some sign of life, some... I jumped at the 6 o'clock whistle. In a moment now, tens of thousands of workers should come pouring out of the tall buildings. Shouts, cries, laughter should fill the air. But the whistle only echoed through the empty streets, and the traffic lights clicked on and off, idiotically, in a mad cycle, red, green, cross, red, green, cross, red, green, cross. Suddenly, a sharp stab of fear knifed through me. I thought of my laboratory, the project I'd been working on when I became ill, internal organic dispersion, a method of activating the energy within a mass, causing it to burst outward. Something must have gone wrong. My assistants had misread the formula and let the force get out of control. Of course, that could have done it. I must get to the lab at once. A burst of speed brought me to my intersection. I leaped to the escalator onto the high-speed pedestrian ramp. Slidewalk, the kids had called it, when there were kids. And a minute later, I was racing through the familiar twists and turns of the Fission building, pushing through the doors to my own laboratory. Panting, I looked about. Everything appeared to be in order. From far below, I could hear the throbbing of the giant cyclotron and the hum of the huge electromagnetic dynamos. The sharp smell of ozone filled the air. I took a quick glance at the control panel. It showed every machine, every piece of apparatus working perfectly. There was nothing wrong, except the fact that they were working. It was after hours and machines should have been turned off. I switched off the main control. And then a cold shiver ran down my spine. There was a new sound, a sound I hadn't expected to hear. Someone was coming up the pressure lift, the private lift leading from the cyclotron to my own laboratory.
I stood facing the cage, watching, waiting. A man stood there. A live man clad in the usual anti-radiation suit. I peered through the glass panel on the headpiece, and then I had to fight to keep hysteria out of my voice. Davis! Davis, it's you! It's really you!
Sure, it's me, Chief. How are you, John? Welcome back. We've missed you.
Davis, you're all right. You're alive.
Of course I'm alive, John. You're the one who's been sick, remember?
Davis, how long have you been down there in the cyclotron housing?
Oh, 2 days. A special inspection tour. I'm glad it's over. Help me out of this suit, will you? The buckle's caught.
Yes, of course. Of course, that explains it.
Explains what?
You were shielded when it happened. Hold tight now while I yank. Yeah. There you are.
Thanks. I can manage now. What do you mean that explains it? Explains what?
I watched him unbuckle the anti-radiation suit.
Where is
I felt
anybody?
I should say something. I tried to, but nothing
What's going
would
on
come.
Here anyway?
Finally, the suit was undone.
This place looks.
Davis started
looks
to step
like
out
morgue.
Of the suit, and finally the words came
understand.
Past my lips. No, no, Davis! Get back! Get back into the suit! It was too late. Before my very eyes, Davis disappeared, and his anti-radiation suit crumpled to the floor. My legs buckled and I began to tremble all over. I knew my hours were numbered. No mind could stand up under repeated explosive shocks such as I had been through. I staggered to the first aid cabinet for a plasma capsule. And as I tilted my head back to swallow the capsule, the building across the street caught my eye and my pulses leaped. Communications building. Communications, Visiphone, long-range telesonic broadcasting. This was it. My opportunity to establish contact with the outside world. I dropped the glass and bottle and capsule and rushed out. 2 minutes later, I was in the main studio. I plugged in the lines, whirled the sending and receiving controls to maximum range, focused the electronic visiscope camera, and switched on the power. Nuclear City calling all stations. Nuclear City to all stations. Clear wires for disaster report. Emergency. Nuclear City calling all stations. Please acknowledge. I shifted the directional beam. Nuclear City calling St. Louis. Omaha. San Francisco. Guam. Tokyo. Come in, St. Louis. Guam. Tokyo. Come in. Nothing. Not the slightest sign that there was anyone anywhere who could hear the sound of my voice or see my image. I turned off the power and swung away. And a slight movement, a tiny flash of light caught my eye. The turntables. The turntables that recorded every program sent out were still going. Turning round and round and round, wearing deep, meaningless grooves in the wax platter. I stepped over to the first table, moved the pickup arm to the start of the record, and switched on the playback control. In another moment, I would hear the last sounds that had issued from Nuclear City's communication center.
2 days later, Rala and I reached the great spaceport of New Terra. We had spent a month in the steaming jungles of Venus and had learned many things. We had learned that the flora and fauna...
Shut up! I'll try the next table. Maybe I'll have better luck.
And dispatches pouring in from all parts of this sector have confirmed earlier reports that the disaster which has struck Nuclear City is... The disaster is due... That is, the condition is caused by a wave of...
Once again, I heard it. Recorded for posterity. The quick, seething hiss. And the silence. I couldn't stand it any longer. I suddenly went berserk. I began smashing everything in sight. The records, piles and piles of them, the machines, the tubes, everything.
Stop it. You'll hurt yourself.
I hardly knew what I was doing. For hours and hours, an explosive force had been building up inside of me, and now it burst loose. And finally, it spent itself. I calmed down and heard her voice.
That's better. Much better. My name is Bolter. Well, turn around. Look at me.
No. No, I'm afraid so. You'll vanish. Like the others.
Nonsense. I haven't vanished yet. Turn around. You see?
Sure. You're beautiful.
Anyone would look beautiful to you now. Anyone alive and real.
How did you escape it, Walter? Why are we here, we two alone?
We must go. We can't remain here any longer.
Go. Yes, you're right. We've got to get away from Nuclear City, away from this whole stricken area.
But how? There is no transportation.
Now, wait,
no.
Wait. My plane.
Plane?
Yes, 6 months ago, before I went into the hospital, I put it up in a small hangar at the spaceport.
6 months ago? It wouldn't be any good now. You couldn't possibly get it into the air.
We can try. It's our only chance, Walter. Come on, there's no time to lose. Do you see anything, Walter?
No, John. It's pitch dark out there. No beacons. No clusters of light.
Keep trying the audio box. I'll see if I can pick up the landing beam.
Calling Chicago. Calling Chicago. Landing instructions requested.
I've got the beam. No. No, it's gone now. Probably a radar reflection. Move over quickly. Let me try that scanner. Chicago. The skyscrapers. The lakefront. The boulevards. What's happened to the lights? What's happened to the airport?
It's no use, John. It's reached here, too. We might just as well have stayed in Nuclear City.
No. We've got to go on. We've got to find someone. I won't believe. I can't believe there's no one left but us. Calling Detroit. Calling Detroit. This is John Rhodes of Nuclear City. John Rhodes calling Detroit. Channel 407. Respond.
You're wasting your breath, John. Turn back.
I'll never turn back. John Rhodes to Harp City. John Rhodes to Harp City. Come in, please. Come in, please. Can you hear me?
Are you convinced now?
Sure, I'm convinced. I'm convinced the stricken area is larger than I thought, but I'm not quitting.
Not quitting? What are you
going to... Strap on your safety belt and switch on the oxygen control. I'm shifting into nuclear overdrive.
Where are we going?
The other side of the Earth. The spaceport at Rio. Steady now. In less than 40 minutes now, we'll be...
What is it? What's wrong?
I don't know. Something's happening. We're swerving. We're swinging around. Some tremendous magnetic force has caught us in its tow.
Turn back, John. Turn back before the ship flies apart.
I can't, Walter. I can't do anything with a plane. She's out of control.
I lay there, looking at the clock. I couldn't bring it into sharp focus, but I knew that the number 3 was slightly chipped, and that when it chimed, there was distinct hesitation between the second and third note. I knew these things because that clock was on the wall of the therapy pavilion on the 36th floor of the psychiatric hospital. Yes, I remember the clock. But how had I gotten here? What had happened to my plane? Where was Walter? Or was any of it real? Had I ever gone down the long corridor? Had I ever really left the hospital? Was the awful experience I had lived through anything more than a very vivid nightmare? And if I screamed now, would a nurse come running?
Help! Help! Nurse!
It's true then. Everything really happened. I'm not dreaming. And Walter. What about Walter? I've lost her too. There's no one left on Earth but me. I'll never see another face or hear another voice.
I know that now. I will sit here in the silence and wait for the end. Footsteps. Footsteps.
Good evening, Mr. Rhodes. I'm Dr. Draneth.
Dr. Draneth? Do I know you?
No, Mr. Rhodes. Not yet. But you will. You will be in my charge from now on. You've been very ill, and you're going on a little journey. Here, take this capsule.
But
take it, Mr. Rhodes. The trip you're about to make is long and difficult. There, that's it. I'll look in again presently.
Dr. Draneth?
He took it, Volta. Yes, I believe we chose wisely. John Rhodes is the greatest nuclear physicist on Earth. He will be of inestimable value to us and our people.
I think our work here is about finished, Doctor. The final reports have just come in. The molecular diffusion cloud worked perfectly.
And according to plan. Those who were not directly affected by the cloud itself were disintegrated by contact with their fellow men. Some died immediately. Some seemed to have a temporary immunity.
Like that woman, Nina, who called to Rhodes from the window.
Mm.
Poor man. Even though we protected him from the disintegration mist, he apparently was still capable of killing others.
But now the chain reaction is complete. There's not a living human being left on Earth, except Rhodes.
Perhaps it was wrong, Dr. Draneth, to destroy these humans.
Wrong?
They were different from what I had expected. As I guarded John Rhodes, I found him kind and intelligent and courageous. Now I'm beginning to think the whole experiment was cruel.
Cruel? I do not understand you, Volta. You're familiar with the history of the planet Earth from the very first pages of recorded time. These Earthmen have bent every effort to kill each other off, to create new and more efficient weapons of death. We merely fulfilled their destiny, but we did it mercifully. The new inhabitants we bring here will be kind, as we are.
I suppose you're right. Well, here are my notes on the 6 hours I spent observing John Rhodes' psychological reactions. You will find them very illuminating. And now, what do we do with him? This last human being left on Earth?
What we planned from the beginning, Volta. You may notify our spaceship anchored beyond the magnetic field to send a tender for us.
Yes, Dr. Draneth.
We and our specially selected Earth specimen are ready for the long journey home. Home to Mars.
+2000 is produced by Dreyer and Winolson Productions, Incorporated. In tonight's cast, Ralph Bell played John Rhodes, Joan Shea was Volta, Nat Poland was Dr. Draneth, and Carl Eastman was Davis. The script was written by Judith and David Bublik. The orchestra was conducted by Emerson Buckley. Music composed by Elliot Jacoby. Sound, Walt Shaver and Adrian Penner. Engineer, Bob Albrecht. We'll be right back.
This has been 2000 Plus. Excitingly dramatic stories of the future. These are events that you will never witness. Adventures into the world of tomorrow. Tune in again next week at the same time for another thrilling story. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Described earlier for release to our West Coast audience at this more convenient listening time.
Central Operational Headquarters, Commander Dystra speaking. This morning at 400 hours, our electronic scanners picked up on oscillator frequency an unidentified spacecraft in Sector K beyond the gravitational field of the planet Mars. Our calculations indicate that this craft will arrive in Space Sector G within the next 24 hours. Emergency directions to all defense units. Coordinate high-voltage destroyers to cover Area G. All units on alert for assault action.
To learn what happened when a strange craft from outer space came into Sector G, listen in a moment to 2000 Plus. Adventures in the world of tomorrow. Dramatic stories of science fiction from the years beyond 2000 AD. Today, the strange adventure of men who dared the unknown through interplanetary space. Worlds apart.
And one thing more, Johnson. Your new Alimoid spacesuit has been tested, and it's everything you claimed it to be. Light, pliable, fireproof, a splendid product. We'll want 50 of them in time for the next space flight 3 weeks from now. Can you make it? Excellent. Good luck, Johnson. Yes?
Your son is here, Mr. Granger. He wants to see you.
Jim here? Well, tell him I can't. Oh, all right, send him in.
Yes, sir.
And Miss Ames, tell Robert he can start punching tape for the mechanical pilot on Flight 17.
Yes, Mr. Granger.
Hello, Dad.
How are you, Jim?
Dad, I've come to ask a favor of you. A big favor.
Well, talk fast, son. I'm very busy. What is it you want?
I want to be assigned to Flight 17.
What? Flight 17? To Neptune? Well, are you crazy?
No, Dad. I've been thinking about this for months.
Well, you can stop thinking about it right now. There's no opening for you, son.
I happen to know there is, Dad. Golding's down with a bad case of acceleration bends. They'll need a new rocket engineer.
But you're too young, too green.
I've done 42 experimentals and 3 moon hops. I'm ready.
Ready? Well, this is an uncharted trip, Jim. A trailblazer. You know what happened to the first flight to the moon, don't you?
Yes, sir. Crashed on the lip of a giant crater.
Yes, and the first ship that tried to reach Mars.
Went haywire and shot off into deep space.
And still you want to make this first flight to Neptune?
Yes, sir.
Well, you have courage, son. I'll say that. But you're not going.
Why not?
Jim, it's not up to me. Captain Roberts chooses his own rocket engineer. You know, all I do is okay the man he selects.
Then I guess I'll be making the flight, Dad. You see, I persuaded Captain Roberts to select me.
Captain Roberts on spaceship Phoenix on flight to Neptune, calling Marshal Granger, control station 2. Roberts calling Granger. Are we still in contact? Roberts calling Granger. Do you read
us? Granger, control station 2. We read you, Roberts. We're still in contact. Go ahead, Roberts.
Ready to report, sir.
Proceed.
At the end of 120 hours of flight, conditions are entirely normal. Crew and passengers have passed safely through 5 accelerations. We are cruising now at a speed of 12 galactic miles per second.
Excellent, Roberts. Continue.
Astrogation reading. Take it, Sandy.
Astrogator Lawson reporting. Our position in space-time units, 17 hours, 4 minutes to the Mars-Jupiter axis, sector G. 23 degrees off the plane of the ecliptic.
Exactly on course, Lawson. Well done.
Rocket control. Take it, Jim.
Rocket engineer Granger reporting. Average rocket discharge rate, 12.7. Consumption level, 19%. Available supply, 300 hours with B2 safety factor.
Good work, son. Congratulations, all of you. Keep it up.
Thank you, sir. Signing off. Everything okay back in the lounge, Jim?
Oh, quiet a few minutes ago when I passed through.
How about that chess game? Are those two physicists still at it?
They're in no hurry. 50,000 miles to a move.
Real thriller. And the music lovers?
Wearing a groove in Beethoven's Fifth.
You know, I don't see how anybody...
Dick. Yes?
Watch your controls, pal. We've been swinging off course.
Off course? Well, you're nuts, lad. I haven't taken my eye off the chart for a second. We've been right on the line.
I'm telling you, we're off course, Dick. 6 points. Better bring her back.
You sure, Sandy?
Am I sure?
Oh, sorry, Sandy. Stupid question. Stand by for directional correction.
Standing by.
Lateral deviation, 6.2. Speed, 12. Magnetic index, gamma 5.
Port side and auxiliary rockets, 5, 7, 13, 15. Ready to discharge. Discharge.
Well, that's that. I still don't understand.
Wait a minute, Dick. Something wrong.
Huh? Wrong? What do you mean?
We're off again.
What are you talking about?
We swung into line for a second, then we pulled right out again.
Oh, but that's impossible, Sandy. There isn't any wind drift or current out here in space. Anything in motion moves in a straight line until it comes within the magnetic field of some body.
That's what I'm afraid of, Dick. I think we're caught in the toe of some tremendous mass.
Now what mass, Sandy? The sun, Mars, Jupiter, everything's where it belongs, isn't it? There aren't any unknown bodies floating about.
Maybe there are.
Maybe the... Like what, Sandy?
A comet.
A comet?
Yeah, a comet. That's what it must be. A wild, uncharted comet from outer space.
Look, Dick. The atmosphere gauge, it's way up. We're not flying through a vacuum. There's something else out there now, some sort of atmosphere.
Gas. Hot gases forming the tail of the comet.
You're right, Sandy. Listen. Hot gases and other things, too.
Sounds like pellets of some kind. Stones.
They're fragments. Meteorites. All trailing behind the comet. We're caught, Dick. Caught right in the middle of it.
The ship. It's just beginning to spin.
We'll be dragged clean out of the solar system, perhaps out of the galaxy.
Oh, maybe not, Sandy. There's one chance. Maybe we can blast ourselves free. Alert. Alert. All personnel to emergency acceleration couches. Prepare to discharge all port-side rockets.
Good. Do you know what you're doing? 127 rockets going off at once. You'll blow us a bit.
Our only chance, Jim. Here goes. 5 seconds. Discharge.
Granger, control tower, calling spaceship Phoenix. Granger calling Phoenix. Come in, Phoenix.
Phoenix.
Granger to Space Patrol. Special alert. Spaceship Phoenix bound for Neptune. Missing 12 hours. May be lost or out of control. All units stand by to intercept signals, if any. Frequency 40,000. Relay any information to Marshal Granger, Control Tower 2. That is all.
Where are you, son? Where are you?
What happened? Oh, my head. I gotta get up. I gotta see. Sandy, get up. Come on, man. I'll give. No. Sandy. Dead.
Dick, you're all right. Thank God.
Yes, Jim, I'm all right. But Sandy.
I know. Head cracked against the control panel. Three passengers are dead, but we're out of it, Dick. Something threw us clear of the comet, some centrifugal force.
Help me up, Jim, quick. Give me the control panel.
Take it easy, Dick. All right. Here we go.
Oh, my head. Jim, how's the power plant?
Half the rocket engines are out.
And the boosters?
Seem to be okay.
Good. We got enough to operate on.
Maybe.
What do you mean?
The nuclear overdrive is shot.
Shot?
Smacked by a meteorite.
Jim, we got to find out where we are. We can't afford to waste a unit of power. Do you know anything about astrogation?
Not a thing. Beyond the moon, I'm lost.
Oh, that's great. A crippled ship lost somewhere in space and a dead astrogator to show us the way.
I'll have to make a wild stab at our position. What's your guess, Dick?
Well, how can I guess? We may be near Neptune or way out near some far-off galaxy. Let's take a crack at that radio relay.
I've been trying all along. Can't raise a thing.
Well, keep trying. It's our only chance. Okay. I'll take a look through the port, see if I can make out anything.
Spaceship Phoenix calling Earth stations Mars, Jupiter, Earth. Spaceship Phoenix, are we coming through?
Can't recognize a star, a planet, an astro body. Jim?
Spaceship Phoenix, can you hear us? Can you hear us?
How long is it since we blanked out?
Can't say, Dick. All our instruments went haywire. Spaceship Phoenix, flight 17 for Neptune in distress. Are we coming through? Answer us. We may have...
Dick, listen.
Spaceship Phoenix, you're coming through. We hear you.
We've got them. They heard us.
No, it can't be. Give me that mic. Hello, this is Space Flight 17. We're off our course and badly damaged. Our position, unknown.
We have located your position, Spaceship Phoenix. Stand by, please.
Jim, that's Earth. We're blown or sucked the world right back toward Earth.
Hello, Phoenix. Are we still coming through?
Like music, sir.
Very well. We're going to bring you in on a beam if you're within range. Does the signal reach you? Please acknowledge.
Got you. Got you perfectly.
Good. Set your degravitators and disengage all engines.
We're in free flight, sir.
Instruct all personnel to get into acceleration compensators. You will land at our spaceport in approximately 4 hours.
Feet. Prepare for landing.
Granger to engine room. Landing jets fore and aft. Discharge.
50 feet. Release airlock. Switch on landing lights. 10 feet. Prepare to land. Contact. Cut motors. We've landed, Jim. We made it.
Don't I know it. Come on, pal. Out you go.
Oh, take your time. We're in no rush now.
You may not be, but I am. In a rush to get down to good old terra firma. Oh, boy, does this air smell good.
What a spaceport, Jim. I didn't know we had anything anywhere that looked like this.
I don't care what it looks like. All I know is that...
Here comes someone. Hello. Hello there. I'm Captain Roberts of the Phoenix. Are we glad to see you?
Stand where you are.
Hey, what's the idea? Well, you don't understand. I said I'm...
Don't move. Captain Roberts, you and your crew and your passengers are all under arrest. Elfin Smith, take over the ship and seal all the exits. No one is to leave. Captain Roberts, you and your companion come this way, please.
authority are we being held prisoners? I want to know. I have the right to demand to know.
Captain Roberts, you're hardly in a position to demand anything.
Well, what is my position, sir?
The title is Commander. Commander Dystra.
Commander? Commander, you know that you will be held responsible for any harm to my passengers or ship.
There's no cause for alarm, Captain. Or threats. Simply holding you here at Green Valley for a short while till we check your credentials.
You've inspected our ship. You know we carry no contraband. Since when does an American have to have his credentials checked in his own country?
I've already explained to you that this entire area, all 500 square miles of it, is government property devoted exclusively to secret research projects. Now, isn't it perfectly obvious why we can't allow you and your passengers to walk about freely?
Maybe, but it isn't obvious why we're not allowed to use the visiphone. Why we can't call our base, report our safe landing.
Perhaps not, Captain Roberts. But then, government regulations often are obscure.
Commander Dystra, we were met with guns and suspicion. Now, you say that was because secret research is going on. Yet when you contacted us above the Earth's atmosphere, you offered to bring us in here. Why did you make that offer if you didn't want us here?
Would you rather be back in space, floundering about in your crippled craft?
That can be arranged. You haven't answered my question.
We brought you in for two reasons. First, to save your lives, if you turned out to be harmless. Second, because it is our policy to apprehend all craft entering our space sector. We have enemies.
Well, the high-handed methods you use, I can see why.
Not high-handed, Captain Roberts. During your detainment here, you and your company will be accorded full courtesy.
We appreciate your courtesy, but we demand the right to contact Chicago here, now, and on that visiphone.
I'm sorry, that is impossible. Donna.
Yes, Commander Dystra?
Arrange for suitable accommodations for Captain Roberts and his crew. The interview is closed.
Commander Dystra, I...
That is all, Captain! Send out a special bulletin to the Science Institute, to all chiefs of the following departments: astrogation, navigation, anthropology, astronomy. Is there anywhere in this solar system or in adjoining constellations a body known as Planet Earth or America? Is there any community, area, or experimental station known as Chicago?
I won't do it, Dick. I won't take this lying down.
No? What are you going to do about it?
Think of something. I'm certainly not going to sit around twiddling my thumbs while the great Dystra checks our credentials.
I don't like the looks of this place any better than you do. Secret project, he says. For all we know, it may be the headquarters of some gangster out there.
There are a lot of things about this Green Valley setup that bother me. Nothing definite. I just get a feeling that everything's a little lopsided. As if I were looking at it through a Coney Island mirror.
Oh, easy now, Jim. You'll be going bats if you...
Dick, I've got it.
Got what?
That visiphone. If we can get into Dystra's office some way, we can phone home.
Oh, no, no. You're way off, Jim. There isn't a chance in a million.
Why not? This room's not locked. They finished work for the day. We saw everybody leave.
All right. All right, we'll try it. But, Jim, watch your step, will you? I feel sort of responsible for you.
The office. So far, so good.
Try the door.
Open.
Inside, fast. It's very dark in here.
But... I don't know. Where was that visiphone?
Oh, it's right here. Put the call in, but don't light the scanning cone. I'll use this pocket flash.
You listen for anyone approaching. Here goes.
Your call, please.
Get me Marshall Granger in Chicago.
Chicago? Where is that?
Chicago, Illinois, USA. Come on, operator.
USA? What place is that near?
Didn't you hear me? I said USA.
I will check it, sir. If you...
Someone coming, Jim. Drop it quick.
We'd better get out. There's two ladies in the corridor. Stand back here in the corner.
Hello? Hello? Someone is here. Please come forward. I know you are here. I can hear your heartbeats. There are two of you there in the back. Please come forward. Oh, this is very childish. Now, that is better. Now we can put on the lights.
Good evening, Commander Dystro.
Captain Roberts.
Congratulations, sir. A very impressive trick, hearing a heartbeat across a 40-foot room.
Trick? Not at all, sir. If it seems strange to you, your hearing must be impaired.
You know why we're here, I suppose.
It's obvious. You are trying to use the visiphone against orders. You gentlemen have abused your privileges as guests. From now on, you will be held prisoners under lock and key.
I've brought you your food, gentlemen.
It's about time.
Well, this is a fancy touch. A woman jailer.
My name is Donna, Captain Roberts. I'm Commander Dystra's assistant. We just remembered you hadn't had any food tonight.
That's very touching. Thank you very much.
Now, take it easy, Jim. She's just carrying out orders. Donna, it was very kind of you to bring us this food, but there's something we need even more.
Well, what is it?
We need some information. We're going mad.
Well, if there's anything I can tell you...
Anything. You could start talking now and continue all night. First, where is this place? Where are we?
You're in Green Valley, Captain.
Green Valley, Green Valley. Where is Green Valley? What continent is it on? What is it bounded by?
I'm sorry, I can't answer that.
You're wasting your breath, Dick. She won't talk.
Then tell me this. How long have you been here?
All my life. I was born here 57 years ago.
But you look like 20. How old is Dystra?
92.
And he can hear a heartbeat at 40 paces?
My hearing's even better. Listen. Do you hear the dogs barking in the distance?
Nuts. If these people are a terrific hoax, or we've wandered into some weird, out-of-this-world madhouse. Good night, Donna.
Good night, gentlemen. I wouldn't try anything foolish.
Shangri-La. Yes, that's where we must be. The place someone wrote about back in the 20th century. If you ask me,
Granger.
It's probably the place.
Roberts. Dick, listen.
Huh?
Granger.
Roberts. The window. There's someone below. Hello there. Who is it?
It's me, Reynolds.
Reynolds, the chess-playing physicist.
Reynolds, how'd you get out? What are you doing down there?
I escaped while the others distracted the guard. I'm making a dash for it.
Dash for what, Reynolds?
There's a small plane at the far end of the field. I spotted it this afternoon. Will you come with me?
It's pitch black out there. You'll never find it.
I'll find it if I have to feel my way.
You're mad, Reynolds.
We've got to get away, Roberts. Don't you understand? This place, it's unnatural. I've seen things that have made my hair stand on...
Now, Reynolds, listen to me. Don't go now. Perhaps tomorrow everything will be...
No, not tomorrow, now. Are you coming, Roberts? Ranger? Very well. When I come back with help, I hope you're still alive.
Now, wait, Reynolds. Come back.
He's gone.
Oh, I hope he knows what he's
doing. Dr. Reynolds, you are out of bounds.
That's Dystra.
Come back, Dr. Reynolds. We cannot permit you to go any further. Last warning, Dr. Reynolds. Do not go near that plane.
There isn't a light on anywhere. How do they know where Reynolds is?
Station 7, stop that man.
I think you're foolish to refuse the food we've been sending you. You haven't eaten all day.
Please put it down, Dawn, and go away.
Commander Dystra wishes me to express his regrets. The injury to Dr. Reynolds was most unfortunate.
Tell Commander Dystra he'll pay for this. Tell him I said...
The electronic beam merely paralyzes temporarily. It leaves no permanent mark. Dr. Reynolds will recover.
How did they manage to hit him in the dark?
Well, I don't understand. We see very well in the dark. Well, good night, gentlemen. Please eat your food. Commander Dystra will be offended if you don't.
Mustn't offend Dystra, must we? Well, here goes this tray out of...
Kim, wait. It's foolish, really.
We'll only get weak if we don't eat. Too weak to help ourselves if an opportunity comes along.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Feel a little lightheaded already. Yeah, hand me that jug of milk.
Here. Pour one for me, too, will you? 3 days we've been here. He could have checked our credentials a dozen times.
Well, happy landing.
Bottoms up. Jim, look out.
What is it, Dick? Why'd you knock the glass out of my hand?
Did you see the color of that milk? Green.
Green? Green milk?
Poison, that's all I can think of.
Of course. Please eat your food, she kept saying. Come on, let's open that window and get rid of this tray. Here goes. Compliment to Jim Granger. Well?
Well, what?
When is it going to land? I didn't hear a sound.
Did you see it as it went down? That heavy metal tray, that big jug, the glasses, they didn't fall, Jim. They sort of floated down.
As if somebody had messed around with the force of gravity.
They reduced the pull of the Earth here at Green Valley, Dick. Maybe that's one of their secret projects, an anti-gravitational force.
Dick, I'm going to find out.
What are you climbing up on that windowsill for?
Well, if it works for a tray full of dishes, why won't it work for me? I'm going to jump out, Dick. There's only one way to find out. Take a big jump. Just walking around doesn't give the answer.
It's 3 stories. You'll land smack on those rocks below.
Well, if I make it, you follow. And if I don't...
I don't do it. Wait, don't jump.
Hold on, Dick. I'll be seeing you.
Jim. Jim, you there?
Here I am, Dick. We made it, all right.
I can't believe it. You hurt?
Just a bruise. It was like a jolt at the end of a parachute jump.
I think I'm going out of my mind, Jim. All those fantastic things that have happened since we landed here. The visiphone operator who never heard of Chicago or the USA.
And Dyster, who can hear a heartbeat across the room. And see in the dark.
Donna, 57 years old, looking like a chorus girl.
Green milk.
And a reduced gravitational pull.
I don't like it. I want to get out.
And there's our ship out in the middle of the spaceport, prepared and ready to go.
Yeah, maybe we could... Dick, I just noticed something.
Yeah?
Last night it was pitch dark, but now...
Now there's a full moon. What's so strange about that?
Take another look at that sky. There, over the rim of the horizon.
Another moon. A second moon. What fools we've been. Don't you see what this means? We're not on the Earth at all. We've landed on some alien planet. We must get to Dystra at once.
Yes, that is it. That explains the things that puzzled us. Your reference to Chicago, to the Earth. The small, strange differences between us.
It's not the differences that bother me now, Dystra. It's the uncanny, incredible similarity between your planet and ours.
Is it so incredible, Captain Roberts? We've shown you our astronomical charts. Our planet, Vesta, is exactly opposite the Earth, on the other side of the sun.
Yeah, that's why we never discovered each other.
We are 90 million miles distant from the sun. You are...
93 million miles.
Well, no doubt both planets split off from the sun at the same time. Vesta is a little smaller than the Earth, and that fact, plus its nearer distance to the sun, gives us less gravity, but otherwise our development has paralleled yours completely.
Even in appearance and in culture and language, you've reached precisely the same stage of development we have.
Which simply proves, Granger, that similar conditions may produce the same results.
One thing still bothers me.
Yes?
How do you stay so young, so vigorous?
That, it is simple. We live in peace and harmony. Our only concern is interplanetary threats.
That's why you were so rough on us.
Precisely.
Well, now that we understand each other, may I use your visiphone?
You want to call Chicago?
No. I want to call our crew and passengers and tell them to get ready for the journey home.
week, an incredible adventure from the world of tomorrow, when a scientist crosses the border of what is known into the strange mysteries of the unknown. Be sure to listen.
And that's this week's Mutual Presents feature. The Mutual Audio Network brings the best of old-time radio and modern audio theater to the world. Be sure to subscribe through the Mutual Audio Network podcast feed, any of our podcast days, or the Mutual YouTube channel, which includes MadCon and many other extra features and shows. See you all next time at Mutual Presents. Good night. Thank you for listening to Sunday Showcase on the Mutual Audio Network. We invite you to continue the amazing audio tomorrow on Mutual with the Monday Matinee, our weekly series of dramatic, theatrical, classic, eclectic, and live radio dramas. You can subscribe to the full Mutual Audio Network feed every day for the world's largest curated collection of audio drama, or find the Monday Matinee feed in your favorite podcast players. See you tomorrow at the matinee, and thanks so much for listening.
The Mutual Audio Network. Listening and imagining together.